Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday, June 10th. I'm here in the studio with Dr. Alan Alday, who is a behavior analyst at the University of Kentucky, and you're listening to Breadbox Media. As I shared in the last hour, I've been through a bit of a change in that if you listen to the program through digital streaming and through your app for your digital device, really no change for you, except you'll just be hearing me reference Breadbox Media more and more. But if you kind of go back and forth, if you live in the Lexington, Kentucky area where we broadcast from, and you sometimes go back and forth between the digital app or the online streaming and regular AM/FM radio, if you turn to AM/FM radio, I'm not sure. Earlier, it was kind of blank on there, but you will be hearing Relevant Radio, which is a nationally syndicated Catholic radio network who has acquired Real Life Radio. And so you'll be hearing Relevant Radio, Morning Air, Drew Mariani, and some of the other programs, Sheila Logminas, all really, really good stuff. You'll be hearing that on the terrestrial radio signal. So if you want to continue listening to Breadbox Media shows, including my show, and then go on down the list, Leo Brown, Mark Shea, and others, Allison Gingras, then you need to get the Breadbox Media app on your digital device, or you can listen online via streaming at breadboxmedia.com. So it's kind of a new day, and all the best to Relevant Radio as they take over the AM/FM signal. And we're going to continue to try to expand out with a sort of unique, what we feel like is a unique voice in Catholic radio, and that we're trying to not simply preach to the choir, so to speak, but to really accompany people who may be searching and maybe alienated from the church or maybe ignorant of Catholicism, because certainly Catholic radio played a role in my own journey to the faith. And I think with yours as well, Alan.
Yeah, it did. Because seeing people that are ignorant to it, I mean, you know, 2 years ago, three years ago, I guess I would have been that person. I was very ignorant to it. You know, you just worship Mary and sit and kneel and stand and sit and kneel and stand, and none of it made any sense to me. So it's amazing what happens in a short amount of time.
Yeah, I guess it's the old adage that if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. Certainly, being Catholic was not in my life plan.
Neither was it in mine.
I never would have. And did you kind of go through a series, you know, the great British Catholic, who is probably more often quoted than he has actually read, G.K. Chesterton, said that there are oftentimes three stages to becoming Catholic. The first is, he says, being fair to the church. So, you know, giving the church a fair hearing as opposed to the caricatures that, mm-hmm. that we often hear. The second step then is what he calls discovering the church. He says it's not long after you're fair to the church that you become fond of the church. You discover all these things that are you know, unique and beautiful and that just fit together, and you're kind of fascinated by it. But he said the third step then is running away from the church. It's like you realize you've been hooked, and you know, it's not some place you wanted to be, and so you resist. Was that similar at all to your own journey?
I'd say the first two definitely were. The third, you know, I think you know, one of the things I tell people about the Catholic faith that I enjoy is that, you know, when you question things, I don't feel like questioning things are, I guess, I don't feel like that's a punished behavior in mm-hmm. the Catholic Church, because, you know, in the Protestant churches, you push things to an extent, and then it's like, well, you got to just step out on faith and believe that. And, you know, and I even had a person once tell me that, you know, you know, faith is not logical. Like, it's got to be from the heart, not the head. And I was like, well, I don't know that I believe that. And that's, you know, as a person that does research, and I like to think, I like to, you know, use logic. I like to try to make logical arguments and stuff. You know, the Catholic Church opened the door for me to be able to my head and my heart, because it is logic, and it is, you know, it's very logical. And I think that's one of the things that's been so amazing to me, is we're not afraid to tackle tough issues, and to really address tough issues. And I think of like John 6, all my life of going to church, I don't know that I ever heard somebody talk on John, you know, speak Jesus, on John 6.
Where Jesus talks about eating his flesh and drinking his blood so explicitly.
Yeah, like, you know, well, that's just a metaphor. Well, how do you know? Well, you just have to have faith that that's a metaphor.
That's
like, well, why didn't he say that, you know, oh, I'm just using this as a metaphor. People don't run away. But, I mean, that's, so I think.
Yeah, he did not do that. He allowed people
to leave.
Who were offended, confused by his words, who found them to be a stumbling block, he allowed them to leave rather than to try to soften it or, you know, oh, you'll have to just understand I was speaking analogously, you know.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that's been so amazing about, you know, about our journey is just the realness. I mean, you know, because I'm not a bandwagon jumper. You know, I was a Braves fan in the 80s when when they would win, you know, 20 games and lose 120. And, you know, then I kind of didn't watch a lot of Major League Baseball. But in the 90s, you know, everybody was a Braves fan because they won a lot.
And not like, me.
I was like, come on. You know, they're just bandwagon jumpers. I mean, you know, I mean, it's, I've never been a person to jump on a bandwagon. I like to, you know, look at the evidence and see what is the case. And, you know, and so for me, it was, and thankfully I have a wife that asks a lot of hard questions. So I don't have to ask a lot of them because, you know, the poor guy that started us in RCA, she's like, well, what about this? I don't understand. Explain that better. You know, and in a nice, genteel Southern way. But nonetheless, it was, you know, she wants an answer.
Sure.
And that's something I always appreciate about her because she's not a bandwagon jumper either. So the fact that, I think with our families, when they knew we were becoming Catholic, they knew this was not like an emotional thing, which, again, I appreciate about the Catholic Church. You can't just, you know, have just this emotional experience in Mass one day and just join. You have to make sure your heart and your head match. And through the RCA, anyway, I'm going on. I was thinking the other day about, you know, altar calls. Which, you know, going to Southern Baptist, you know, just as I am, and how many times that we would sing that at the end of a service, because and the preacher would stand up there and say,
da, 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 da.
Now I know, and you know, that there's the piano player in the background. Now I know somebody's here that needs to come down, and you know, be like, okay, somebody's got to go, so we got to get out of here by, by 2 o'clock. So, but there's none of that. I mean, there's not the. Make the emotional decision, you know, it's make a rational decision.
Right.
So anyway.
Well, and if you think, I mean, y'all came into the church, was it back in January, was it?
That's
and
right.
So you're kind of going through your first liturgical year, and now we're in this season called Ordinary Time, which really the focus of Ordinary Time is in many ways what normal looks like as a disciple of Christ in his church. And so this is kind of, you know, you probably passed a little bit of that emotional high even of coming into the church. Now it's just that ongoing life of living as a Catholic.
So my question is, this is ordinary time. So why don't we start off with the Sermon on the Mount? Probably the hardest.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the hardest things that Jesus said, you know, don't judge. Or you'll be judged in the same way. You know?
Yeah, or how about today's passage? You know, if anyone looks at a woman with lust, he has committed adultery in his heart and all that. I mean, yeah, Jesus does not, or yesterday's, you know, you've heard you was said that you shall not kill, but I say whoever is angry with his brother.
I was like, come on. I mean, so what's ordinary about this? You know, I mean, this is, it kind of is, it's not ordinary, that's for sure.
With God, all things are possible, Alan. That's what
right.
We have to keep
saying. It's a good thing, too, because, but you know, it is exciting, though, to be in this and to have what we have. Because, you know, when we were down in, over the course of a couple of weeks, we went to Mass here in Lexington. Then we were down in Demopolis, and we went to Mass down in at St. Leo, you know, and that's, then we were up in Ohio and went to Mass at St. Mary's in Delaware, Ohio. So, I mean, we in 1 week, we went to Mass in three different states. And it's just so amazing to me that it's the same, you know, it's the same liturgy. It's the same everything. And something that for us that was so important. It's like the people at St. Leo's, they only get just a few days a week that they get to have Mass. I mean, they don't even get to have Mass daily. And heaven forbid, I mean, places around here, we get Mass, you know, multiple times a day that we could, you know, we can choose from. And so it just makes me thankful to be somewhere where we have access to that pretty much whenever, almost whenever we want it, you know. And so anyway, it's been an amazing thing.
Well, it's a blessing to have you in the Catholic Church, and certainly I know you're blessed as well to be a part of it, and your family's a blessing. We did get one comment on this whole whining issue. I got this through a Facebook message. Shannon said she remembers, you know, her dad would sing "Listen to the Whiner's Whine." She said this is, of course, after he had decided that we were whining, what we were whining about wasn't threatening or a major physical need. She said she went to a parenting class that talked about whining, and that whining signals a need to be filled. Our job is to figure out what that need is.
Yep. So that's right. That's exactly it. And I would imagine probably the whining the class she went to probably didn't talk about it in behavior analytic terms, but you know, that's really what it is. What's the need, or what's the want, and let's see if we can do it. And the beautiful thing is, if you can begin to predict at certain times that kids whine, then you can prevent it. So it is a very preventable, but a lot of behaviors are preventable.
All right. Maybe we can talk about that next time. He is Dr. Alan Alday, behavior analyst, University of Kentucky, faithful Catholic, along with his wife, Carrie, and their family. Blessings, Alan. Thanks for being here today.
You and your wife, too.
All right. Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Great to have you back in. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be talking with John L. Allen Jr., who is the editor-in-chief of Crux, the Crux website. If you go to cruxnow.com, taking the Catholic Pulse, you'll kind of read what all Crux is about. They've got a vast number of contributors, including Ina San Martin, probably their most prominent one, who's a regular guest on the program. John Allen has been gracious enough every month or two to be on. He's going to talk about Crux's vision. He went through a web redesign, but also his vision of finding balance within Catholicism, which ain't always easy. As you'll discover quickly, if you've not been Catholic before, when you enter the church, there is a wide spectrum of folks who call themselves Catholic and a whole host of different viewpoints. And that's, by the way, always been the case in the church. In fact, came across a great quote from our friend Mark Shea. Mark Shea, who also has a program on Breadbox Media. You can hear his show from 5 to 6 p.m. All you got to do is get the digital app for your digital device or listen to the digital stream. But Mark Shea, who has forgotten more about the faith than I've ever known, Mark Shea was at an event, where actually it was a debate of sorts with a guy by the name of Michael Voris. Michael Voris has a ministry called Church Militant TV, in which you kind of see these blurbs go around. He's sort of a perpetual critic of the church and of the hierarchy, and you know, calls out what he sees as liberal elements in the church and so forth, and is arguing along with a number of other folks. Again, we're a big family, so there's all kind of different temperaments and personalities. Ed always sees the church as in. Or sees the church as in crisis, a crisis that we need to resolve. Sometimes you see this even in, I think there's an online magazine called Crisis Magazine. That's the idea. And so this debate basically was, what's the nature of the church these days, the Catholic Church in the West? Is the church in crisis, and what can we do about it? And so the question was put to Mark Shea about whether the Catholic Church is currently in crisis right now. And Mark Shea basically began by saying the church is in a crisis. The church was born out of crisis. Crisis is not a bad thing. I mean, we worship a man who was crucified, who was convicted by kangaroo court and crucified between two criminals on a garbage heap, right? I mean, the church was born in crisis. This romantic, nostalgic idea that there have been times in the history of the church hasn't been in crisis. Just read the book of Acts. It's one crisis after another. And he has this great quote about the nature of crisis. I want you to just hear it.
If you think that the goal of our lives as Catholics is to end the crisis, you are like the person who thinks that the goal of river rafting is to escape the river.
That's pretty good right
That's
there.
That's not the goal of river rafting.
As he says, the goal of river rafting is to navigate the river. That's what it's about. Yes, when the crisis is over, you know what that is? That's heaven. Heaven is when the crisis is over. In the meantime, we're not called to escape the crisis. We're called to navigate in the midst of it. And I think I get a sense that that's what John Allen is about with his Crux Now. You're going to see a variety of different viewpoints expressed on the website, which is just part of being Catholic, to be quite honest with you. If you've got a comment or a question, I'm asking a question of the day, since we're going to be talking with John of his website, Crux or CruxNow.com. When it comes to religion-oriented news, links, and commentary, what are the three websites you tend to gravitate to the most, besides social media, for example? You know, where do you go when you want religion-oriented news, links, and commentary? 573-4-BREAD-4, you can call. Or text 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. As I said, probably my three most prominent would be RealClearReligion.org, which is an offshoot of RealClearPolitics.com, which I like RealClearPolitics because I think it presents a broad spectrum of both conservative and liberal thought and all across the blogosphere on that issue. And so you see links to all sorts of different things, as well as surveys, opinion polls, and election surveys and so forth. Well, they have an offshoot called RealClearReligion.org, which is sort of a clearinghouse for various viewpoints on religions, not just Catholic, not just Christian, but a variety. A second one I go to quite often is NewAdvent.com. Or is it newadvent.org? I can't remember. Maybe both. New Advent is a Catholic site with links to various articles written across the internet. I have a sort of sentimental attachment to New Advent because on my own journey to the Catholic Church back in the day when I was a Methodist pastor, part of my discovery of the Catholic faith happened when I would be doing, let's say, sermon preparation. I mean, I had already become curious about Catholicism from reading the novels of Graham Greene and also reading the Journal of Religion and Public Life called First Things. But let's say I would be preaching a sermon or a series of sermons on baptism. And so I do a little internet research, and I happen to regularly find myself coming upon the New Advent Catholic Encyclopedia online. And I remember reasoning at the time, well, you know, the Catholics have been at this stuff for a while. They probably have something worth saying. So I would read about baptism, for example, in the New Advent Catholic Encyclopedia. And over time, of course, I began to discover that either I had a false impression of what Catholics actually taught as I would read this resource, or I would come to discover the biblical reasons behind particular Catholic teachings, and it made more and more sense. And I would find myself having these aha moments like, oh, that's what the Catholic Church teaches, or that's why the church teaches that. So I have a little soft spot in my heart for New Advent, their Catholic Encyclopedia, but also newadvent.org and their various links. And then the third one that I go to is Crux, John Allen's website that we'll talk to him about at the bottom of the hour. So how about you? Let's see. Christy says she frequently visits, this is on Facebook, I frequently visit the YouTube pages of Bishop Robert Barron, Father Mike Schmitz, and Chris Stefanik. Those are more for commentary, but usually quite timely. I know a variety of Catholic bloggers at the National Catholic Register and Patheos. Not sure how newsy those are. And then Deacon Dennis, he's trying to score points, I guess. He put Breadbox Media down. as his first source for Catholic news, links, and commentary. Well played, my man. Well played. Anyway, back to this whole issue of whining. Really enjoyed that conversation with Alan all day. He's just so self-effacing and humble. That's what I appreciate about him. If you want to turn me off as a parenting expert, then portray yourself as having all the answers and having it all together. You want to get my attention? Present yourself as one who is accompanying me on a journey and discovering as you go. And I think there's something to be said, a lesson we can learn about evangelization there, that we are most effective in pointing people to the love of God in Jesus Christ when we accompany people, acknowledging our own weaknesses and shortcomings and our dependence upon God. So I think there's a parallel there. Anyway, Shannon talking about, sent me a message on her own approach to whining. She says, I try to show empathy, ask for words or model words, fill the need if it's possible and necessary, but I wonder if some are more prone to whining. I don't think I encourage whining. Sometimes I just try to say things like use words or talk myself through it in my head. I think sometimes I'm just too wiped out to stop and get down on my knees every time my whiner, I have five whines. But, you know, as some have said, in fact, Leslie, who she said she took a parenting course from, says not to ignore it. It's rough. I wonder if kind of the adult version of whining is nagging, where we think somehow when we have an issue with somebody in our family, maybe it's our child, maybe that's our symmetrical version of whining as adults is nagging. We think we can sort of through persistent and unyielding commentary finally change behavior. I'm got to give a big mea culpa. I may not whine per se, but I do nag, and it's not a good quality, and does not accomplish the purpose that you think it accomplishes sometimes. So anyway, I do think the point is a good one, that sometimes whining can be an expression of frustration from a child to our distractedness. Read a very good article, actually, on the website that I go to sometimes. It's actually written, it's a website called Cup of Joe. It's written by Joanne Goddard, New York City, a very secular person. I'm sure we have a lot of different opinions on things. But she has some interesting perspectives as sort of a modern parent, modern mother. But she talks about the need for slow parenting, which means just enjoying your children, putting away the devices and the agendas, not being in a hurry, and to take a moment to drink them in and to remember and remind yourself how remarkable your children are, and not to overschedule ourselves. Really not good at that. Slow parenting, maybe that would help with some whining. I'm not saying all of it, human nature being what it is. Anyway, we'll be back with John L. Allen Jr. at the bottom of the hour to talk about Crux Now, his vision, balance within Catholicism. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Right at the bottom of the hour. We're back on the Mike Allen Show on Breadbox Media on this Friday, June 10th. Heading off this weekend for a weekend retreat with some engaged couples, six engaged couples to be specific, and with a priest friend, Father Frank. If you remember Bracketology with Father Bronner, he'll be there. So I know we'll have a great time. And then two other couples, married couples, will be with us, Brian and Kate, and Brian and Carla. We're trying, by the way, to effort John L. Allen Jr. who's going to be with us from Crux Now via Skype. And right now we're not getting him. We'll continue to work on that effort him. Hopefully throughout the rest of the program we'll be able to get him on. But anyway, I'll be heading down to spend a weekend with six engaged couples. Always interesting. I certainly covet your prayers for that experience. All couples always come with sort of different perspectives and mindsets in terms of the weekend. For some, it feels like traffic school that they have to go through in order to check off a requirement. Others come with a truly open heart. What we pray is that over the course of the weekend, of course, that hearts can be opened to the beauty of marriage, as well as to the challenge of married life and the need for grace. So look forward to that this weekend and covet your prayers. When we think about the challenges of married life, we can think too about the gospel reading for today. The gospel reading, as we've said, we've been all week long in this ordinary time and in this unfolding understanding of what it means to be, to live the normal life of being a Christian disciple. We have these very high liturgical seasons like Advent, the Christmas season, of course. Then you have the deeply penitential season and preparation of Lent. And then you have the glory of the Easter season. And then we have what we call ordinary time. Ordinary, more of a reference to these are the Sundays that we count, but it has more of a, okay, we're back to sort of normal life type of feel to it. But the Catholic faith pushes us on that to understand that normal living, and Alan Alday was touching on this earlier when he said, you know, here we are in ordinary time, and we're hearing in the Gospels perhaps the most extraordinary call to a life of love and surrender that you could ever hear, and that's Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, in which he begins with this complete culturally counterintuitive values in the kingdom, that blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, and so forth. And then it becomes clear as you get deeper into the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus, who says he hasn't come to abolish or to cancel the law and the prophets, he has come, in fact, to fulfill them and to deepen them and to expand them and to understand that, as we talked about yesterday, it's not about outward conformity to these principles in the Ten Commandments or the Decalogue. It's about the transformation of the heart. And so we really get into this understanding of what it is that life as a disciple in this new kingdom that's breaking into the world of Jesus is to look like. And sometimes it can be not a life that brings us tremendous interior peace, so there are times that that happens, but sometimes it is a life that can bring us to a place of despair. But not all despairs are created equal. Certainly, the believer should never be prone to despair in terms of despairing one's own eternal salvation, despairing of God's presence or God's hope. But there is, I think, a good kind of despair that we can kind of see revealed in this gospel reading today, in which Jesus says to his disciples, and I always preface this because we talk about this passage when I work with engaged couples, probably the most challenging thing Jesus ever said. In fact, two of the most challenging things in today's passage. Jesus said to his disciples, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.'" Now, what's he going to say next? "But I say to you, commit adultery. Register at AshleyMadison.com. Knock yourself out." I mean, isn't this Jesus who came to lighten things up? No. He does just the opposite. Jesus says, "But I say to you, everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Now, there have been times over in recent memory where prominent public persons have talked about lust in the heart. And in both times, they've been ridiculed. Jimmy Carter, back in the late 70s, admitted, I think, in an interview in Playboy magazine that he had sometimes looked at a woman with lust. Then Pope John Paul II, now Pope St. John Paul II, once remarked that it was possible to lust within marriage. And it, of course, brought about howls of derision this just goes to show how uptight the Catholic Church is, and so forth and so on. And what they really missed, particularly in that second example with John Paul II, was that they really missed how John Paul II deepened our understanding of what lust is. Lust is not sexual desire. In fact, John Paul II affirmed, as the church has always affirmed, the goodness fundamentally of sexual desire, the attraction to the other, the attraction of beauty. In fact, it's the initial stirrings of love in the heart. I see something beautiful and I want it for myself. I want that beauty. That's sort of the beginnings of love. It's not love in its most mature, but sexual desire written into our nature as man and woman created in the image of God and called to communion is a good thing. Lust is not the same thing as sexual desire. Sexual desire is not shameful. Lust is the objectification of the other. It's treating another person as an object to be used as opposed to a person to be loved. And John Paul II said in really a great book that I would strongly recommend that he wrote while still a bishop called Love and Responsibility. He talked specifically about that that a person is a being whose only the only proper response to a person is love, and that love's truest opposite is lust. In fact, it's lust that, in a sense, was the corruption of love in the very beginning when the original couple turned from God in mistrust, ate of the fruit, became aware of their nakedness, and felt shame. That shame being a protective mechanism because they no longer trusted the look of the other, the look which was no longer one of self-giving, which goes out to the other and is wonderfully and beautifully unconcerned with self, but became corrupted, turned in on itself, which is what sin is. The heart turned in on itself, became an expression of lust. Lust, which means to objectify the other. It's more than just the stereotype of the old man in the trench coat on the street corner leering at women. Lust is anytime we objectify another person, which, believe it or not, is possible even within marriage. But you read a passage like that, just as yesterday's passage where Jesus said, "You've heard it said, you shall not kill, but I say anyone who is angry with his brother is liable to judgment." Jesus cutting straight to the heart that it's not simply about outward obedience, it's about interior conversion. Lust, which it's not just problematic with lust that it can lead to adultery. It's the fact that lust in many ways does what adultery does at an interior level, and it reduces the person as an object to be used. And then he goes on, Jesus says in this passage, to say something else. Whoever divorces his wife must give, it was also said, whoever divorces his wife must give her a bill of divorce, this coming from Moses. But I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, unless the marriage is unlawful, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. This, by the way, is the sort of teaching that would later get Jesus' response or questioned by the Pharisees, why are you contradicting Moses? And again, as Jesus said at the time, Matthew 19, that Moses allowed you to divorce your wives because of your hardness of heart. But from the beginning, it was not so, that he had come to restore God's original plan and design of marriage as an indissoluble union. Now, you read these passages as other passages in the Sermon on the Mount, like yesterday, it can quickly drive one into despair. You want to run the white flag up the pole. You want to say, God, if this is the standard, I can't possibly live it. What I want to say to you is, that's the good kind of despair. Why is it the good kind of despair? Because if we come to the realization when we see that Christ's vision of what his kingdom is about and what he wants to do in us, if we realize, I cannot do this on my own, you're right where God needs you to be. I'm where God needs me to be. because this kind of life is impossible without grace, without His transformation, without Him converting us and doing in our hearts what we cannot simply do through sheer effort. This is the nature of ordinary discipleship, is recognizing my own sin and my need for mercy. This is what St. John Paul II said about this very passage. He said, are we to fear the severity of these words or to have confidence in their power to save us? Many of his teachings people responded to by saying, oh, that's impossible for a man to do. And St. John Paul II said, but of which man are we speaking? Of a sinful man or man redeemed by Christ? That's the key question. Because with Christ, in fact, all things are possible. Doesn't mean it'll be easy. It may take time. But God, by His grace, can lead us there. We'll be back in just a minute. We'll keep efforting. John Allen. This is The Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on this Friday, June 10th, we were able to get a hold of John L. Allen Jr., who is the editor-in-chief of Crux, taking the Catholic Pulse. Of course, John, a veteran writer and reporter covering the Catholic Church, one of the most respected English-speaking journalists in the Catholic world, written several books, particularly powerful recent ones on persecution of Christians throughout the world, and is now overseeing the new redesign of Crux and its partnership with the Knights of Columbus. Live from Denver, John L. Allen Jr. Hello, John.
Hello there, Mike. Always an honor to be in the ear of anyone named Allen.
Yeah, that's exactly. And I had a guest on earlier named Allen Alday, and as I like to say, he's Allen Alday, I'm an Allen Alday, and you are too.
Yeah, 24/7, all Allen all the time.
It's humor like that is why we get the big bucks, John.
Yes, exactly. It's that witty repartee that has made us the stars of this business we are.
That's exactly right. Well, you Crux, the excellent CruxNow.com, excellent website, had a redesign of its website, and you put out as the editor a note about that, as well as helping people understand a little bit of what the vision of Crux is. So let's talk first about why the redesign.
Well, I mean, in part, Mike, it was imposed upon us. You know, we separated from the Boston Globe a couple months ago. While we were at the Globe, the Crux site was on their servers, and it was being operated with proprietary software that belongs to the Globe. And, of course, we couldn't bring that with us. So, you know, we had to do something. We decided to take the opportunity to kind of rethink the look and feel of the site. Try to maintain as much of its familiar feel as we could, but try to make it newsier, a little more interactive, and so on. And I thought since we were doing that, and obviously, you know, the day that we launched, when people came onto the site, they would notice that something had changed. So I owed readers an explanation of that. But I also thought it was an opportunity now that Crux 2.0, this independent, non-Globe-sponsored version of Crux, has been up and running for a while. I also thought it was a logical moment to try to say something about our vision for what we're trying to accomplish. And you've already quoted the soundbite. You know, to put it into a nutshell, the idea here is we want to practice balance within Catholicism. And both elements of that formula are important. By Catholicism, I mean we are unambiguously committed to the teaching and tradition of the Catholic Church. We believe the Catholic Church is a force for good in the world, and that it's important enough to deserve our best journalistic efforts. Within that, however, we don't want to carry water for any particular ideological agenda. We don't want to be the voice of conservative Catholicism or of liberal Catholicism. We want to be a place where all of those different constituencies feel like they get a fair shake, and that's the idea here.
Yeah, it's you. Of course, you changed your byline from covering all things Catholic to taking the Catholic Pulse, and honestly, if you're going to take the Catholic pulse, I mean, let's face it, there is a wide variance of points of view within the Catholic Church on a whole host of different issues.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, people often style this, Mike, as if it's Catholics versus the rest of the world, as if Catholicism is one monolithic sort of block of thought. And, you know, the truth of it is those of us who live and move and have our being inside the church, you know, we know very well that you can be an utterly 100% faithful Catholic in terms of adherence to church teaching, and yet, you know, disagree ferociously on all kinds of things. And, you know, look, we live in a media landscape, you and I both know this, you know, in which the dominant business model these days is that you pick one side of the street and you kind of cater to it. You know, and that's not just, that's hardly just in the Catholic Church, that's true generally. I mean, if you look at the American media these days, I mean, you know, we could talk about cable TV networks, or we could talk about major American newspapers. You know, it's pretty clear what their ideological alignment is, okay? Not to say they can't play fair, not to say they can't be open to other voices, but generally speaking, they've got a pretty clear slant. As much as possible, Crux wants to try to operate without a slant. Okay, so we want the quote-unquote conservative Catholic, or the quote-unquote traditionalist Catholic, or the quote-unquote avant-garde, reform Catholic, whatever label you want to use. We want all of those folks to look at us as a kind of level playing field.
And so, you'll see different writers who may be across the ideological spectrum, all represented and linked on Crux.
Yeah, that is exactly the idea. Now, when we say all across the ideological spectrum, we mean the ideological spectrum of faithful Catholicism.
Right, sure.
Yeah, but yes. So, for example, I mean, just to pick a couple of names. You know, you will see on some days on the Crux site somebody like Father Dwight Longenecker or maybe Tom Williams out of Rome, who would, I suppose, conventionally be seen as a little bit more conservative. But you could also find Father Edward Beck writing out of New York, a CNN buddy of mine. Charlie Camosi from Fordham, who would conventionally be seen as a little bit more center-left or left. And they are all part of the Crux mix. And the idea is, you know, we don't want to be a media outlet that is predominantly on one side but has a token writer from the other side of the street. You know, we want to – I use that line from Chesterton, from Orthodoxy, that, you know, Catholic doctrine and discipline put up walls – but they are the walls to a playground, not a prison. Okay, and we, in a sense, want to be that playground where all the different voices in the Catholic conversation kind of feel like they're at home.
I think there are a lot of people, John, not just outside the church, maybe even inside the church, who would be surprised on how relatively few things the church has definitively declared a teaching. I mean, there are certainly, obviously, some very clear and unambiguous unchanging church teachings, but there are a whole host of other things in which the church allows people the freedom to think and to wrestle and, you know, to discern.
Sure. You know, people look at the Catechism of the Catholic Church, right? That big, thick book, a compendium of official church teaching that came out under St. John Paul II. And they think, my God, the Catholic Church is an answer for absolutely everything, you know? But the truth of it is, most of our official teaching consists of principles rooted in tradition and in the gospel that are open to a wide variety of different interpretations. I mean, look, if we want to take a practical example from recent Catholic experience, okay, there's the question of whether a Catholic who is divorced and civilly remarried, that is, who got married outside the church, after some kind of penitential path or internal forum conversations with a priest, whether that person can be readmitted to the sacrament of Holy Communion. Okay. That is not a question that is definitively, at least yet, definitively settled by a formal dogmatic pronouncement. And quite obviously, if you look around, Catholics have very different opinions about it. The point is, we don't want to be seen as supporting one or another side in those kinds of debates. We want to be seen as the place where all the voices in those debates can be heard with kind of full respect.
Well, I certainly appreciate what you do there, and it's one of my go-to sites, so I really appreciate that. And I think precisely for that reason, for the fact that you're seeking that balance within Catholicism, I have to also say, really pleased that there at the banner underneath your headline, you've got Pope Francis, you've got John L. Allen Jr., and then you've got our good friend Enos San Martin, who's been gracious enough to be regular on this program. Enos, moving up in the world.
Well, you know, I actually got in trouble with her the other day because we had to do these house ads for the site, right? When you've got a spot where you haven't actually sold an ad, but you want something there, so you have a crux promo. And I had designed one of them to sort of promote Inez's work, in which I described her as the second most important Argentinian in Rome. Now, she pointed out that some of the other Argentinians get upset by that, but I am profoundly convinced it is true. I think Inez is the best young Vatican writer of her generation, and I think on her trajectory, one day she could easily be the best of them all.
Wow. I want to talk really quick. I said you're in Denver right now, but you will soon be going to Rome, and you're going to be actually traveling on the papal plane, which, just to let everyone know, is not called Shepherd One. You'll be going.
No, I mean, actually, Mike, to tell you the truth, when you're a reporter, traveling on the papal plane is a somewhat dismal experience because they stick you back in steerage. So the seats are uncomfortable. The food is mediocre. But I will give it this. In the Pope Francis era of these live, spontaneous press conferences at the end, the in-flight entertainment is spectacular.
Well, of course, the big controversy, I guess, or question will be as he goes to Armenia, you know, this the idea of the terminology of the Armenian genocide and how this is characterized. And, you know, the Turks will be watching, of course. And how do you think that whole thing will play out? We got about a minute left.
Well, Pope Francis has already unambiguously referred to the genocide in Armenia. I am quite confident he'll use that language again. He's visiting, of course, their memorial. So you're right, there will undoubtedly be some diplomatic blowback from Turkey, but I think he'll use it as an opportunity to talk not just about Armenia, but about the broader experience of contemporary Christian martyrdom and persecution, which you and I well know happens on a staggering scale. It's one of the core priorities for the Pope, and I think he'll use this opportunity to shine a spotlight on it.
Well, John, always a pleasure, and appreciate you getting up early to be with us, and blessings on the ongoing work of Crux and that elusive desire for balance within Catholicism.
Thank you, Mike. God bless.
Take care. Thanks for being with us today. Unable to get to Dial a Catechism, I promise I'll make up for it Monday. We'll spin the wheel twice. Maybe that'll stop the protests. You've been listening to Breadbox Media and The Mike Allen Show. Again, have a great weekend.